What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod. Congress says the fifth time is the charm to avoid shutting down the government. And Republican Nikki Haley gets her first win of 2024 just ahead of this week's big votes.
Tomorrow's primaries, it's Super Tuesday, and we will see after that.
Dune's big box office debut, $81 million for the Warner Brothers Discovery sequel. Media analyst Rich Greenfield.
When you put really compelling content in theaters, people show up. The challenge is that audiences are being a lot more selective.
And Apple hit with a big antitrust fine in the EU. Steve Kovac and the tech giant's next big play for shareholders.
The goggles aren't going to do it.
Did you buy one?
Are you out of your mind?
I didn't even buy one.
Plus, it's Women's History Month, the value women bring to the workforce and the economy, with journalist Joanne Lippman.
We hit a record of female workforce participation for prime-age women, 25 to 54, last spring, and it has stayed historically high levels since then.
It's Monday, March 4th, 2024. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue it, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is off today.
Congressional leaders have released the details of the first six budget bills needed to keep government agencies funded after this weekend's deadline. Democrats secured full funding of a special food assistance program for women, infants, and children, which we were talking about last week, as well as rent assistance and pay for infrastructure employees like air traffic controllers and railway inspectors. And Republicans celebrated victories on veterans' gun ownership and funding cuts to several agencies, including the Environmental Protection Agency, the FBI, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Now, the funding package now heads to the House for a vote where it will likely face some opposition from the House Freedom Caucus and require some bipartisan support, which we've seen on recent bills to pass.
Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley won her first GOP presidential nominating contest yesterday. NBC News projects that she won the District of Columbia primary by a margin of about 63% to Donald Trump's 33%. Trump responded calling Haley queen of the swamp. The Super Tuesday primaries are tomorrow, and here's what Haley said yesterday on Meet the Press when asked if she would drop out if she doesn't win any states tomorrow.
I've always said this needs to be competitive. As long as we are competitive, as long as we are showing that there is a place for us, I'm going to continue to fight. That's always been the case.
15 states and one territory will vote for their nominee in tomorrow's primaries. It's Super Tuesday, and we will see after that.
If she goes 0-15 tomorrow, could you still claim that you're competitive, do you think?
Part of what she said in that interview yesterday is as long as she continues to get donations that are coming in and stuff.
That's another question, though, if anyone continues to
send money.
She doesn't win any. If she does, I haven't looked at, who knows, I don't know what the polls are.
Yeah.
D.C.'s a unique place.
It is. Separately, a new poll by the New York Times and Siena College found that the majority of President Biden's 2020 voters now say he's too old to be effective. The poll found that the misgivings about the president's age cut across generations, gender, race, and education. Just 15% of Trump's 2020 voters say that they thought he was too old to be effective at this point.
In the Supreme Court, we were talking about this, announced yesterday, kind of weird and rare, that it would issue at least one decision today that's being seen as a signal that it's going to rule on former Trump's eligibility for Colorado's primary ballot. The announcement that said that Monday's opinion or opinions would be posted online at 10 a.m. Eastern, and that the court would not take the bench. The Colorado Republican Party had asked the court to act before the state's primary vote tomorrow, and the decision is expected to apply to the other states where Trump's eligibility to run have been challenged. And no matter what, you're going to hear the same type of stuff. Well, people want it to be 9-0 from one side, just so that you can't make the claim that it's partisan. Mm-hmm. Either way, you're going to hear that the court is stacked because with conservative judges, and we need to expand it and blah, blah, blah. You're going to hear it either way. There's going to be outrage if they... Even if it's 9-0, but if it's 8-1 or 7, if it's 8-1 or 7-2, less so. But either way, you're going to hear it. But it's just, for people worried about democracy, if you were to really let a local judge decide on a national election who people are allowed to vote for, that would be very strange for people who advocate they want democracy.
Well, before a case has been presented, I think, is the other question.
What do you mean before he was convicted of insurrection?
Right.
Whether that would happen or not. We did have an impeachment based on that. Shares of Li Auto are falling. The maker of plug-in hybrid vehicles launched its first full electric model on Friday. The price tag of nearly $78,000 was higher than analysts were expecting. The company also announced that it delivered 20,000 vehicles in February, up 22% from a year earlier, but far below the January numbers. The stock been on a tear in the last nine straight sessions before today's drop, as you can see on that chart there. Right now, I'm going to look up, see what one of these things looks like. If you said, you know what?
The auto?
No idea what it looks like. No idea. All right.
You look that up.
I'm going to look it up.
I will talk about what happened at the weekend box office because it was a pretty big weekend. Dune Part 2 brought in an estimated $81.5 million in its debut weekend. That was the highest of any film released this year. 23% of those tickets were for IMAX screenings. IMAX CEO Rich Gelfand said that the only reason that wasn't higher is that they ran out of seats, couldn't sell anymore. Did you find it?
Yeah, I did. I definitely don't want one. I have no, did you look it up?
Uh-uh, looking right
generic.
Now.
Just the most generic-looking SUV I've ever seen. No. No, I want the new Tesla Roadster if it ever comes out. Another broken record. Iowa's Caitlin Clark is now the NCAA Division I all-time leading scorer. She needed just 18 points to break the record and did it before halftime on a free throw, based on, I guess, a technical foul. But she's cool. I mean, she... They even interviewed her at halftime. She goes, and they said, well, what do you think about this? You know, you passed Pistol Pete Maravich's record of 3,667 career points, a record that stood more than 50 years. She finished the game with 35 points, but at halftime she said, they asked her about it. She's, we can definitely do better in the second half. You know, we missed some defense, and, we definitely got to get clean things up in the second half. Totally talking about defeating
Ohio State.
She also
said that she hoped that she'd be remembered for more than this. The joy of the game, how much fun she has with her teammates
on
these things.
She's like ice, though. It's just awesome to watch. And we'll be able to watch her as turn pro, too.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, Apple hit with a massive fine from the European Union. CNBC's Steve Kovac has the details and the implications for the tech giant.
This is more than double what people were expecting.
More than triple.
The fine to be. Yeah, more than triple what people were expecting.
Dune Part 2 raked in $81 million over the weekend. A box office win for Warner Brothers Discovery. Media watcher Rich Greenfield on that win and the tough times at the movies.
There's just so much incredible content at home. The bar to leave your house, the bar to go to a theater is just higher than it was.
But some films, they're worth going to.
I thought Anatomy of the Fall was the best picture I've seen in the past year.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janicehenderson.com.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. Today with Joe Kernan and Becky Quick. Here's Becky.
Folks, we do have some breaking news out of Europe concerning Apple. Steve Kovac is here. He's got the details on that. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, this is a €1.8 billion fine, that's about 1.9 and change in U.S. dollars against Apple. This is over Apple Music in Europe. Spotify filed a complaint with the European Commission several years ago, and this is all the same stuff, guys, that we've been talking about, just the fees that Apple takes, Apple's inability, or rather Spotify's inability to charge within its app without actually giving Apple that cut. Apple's response here, they said they are going to appeal the decision, and they lay out, there's a big blog post going up any minute now from Apple, kind of ripping apart this decision, basically saying things like Spotify has taken advantage of the Apple ecosystem by paying basically no commission fees, by kind of getting around those fees. I talked to one of Spotify's lawyers about this last week, guys, and their position on this is, well, you know, we want to pay less fees, of course, they want to make more money, but what they also say is, you know, Apple's ecosystem wouldn't be as successful without these third-party apps. Who wants to buy a phone that you can't, you know, download a third-party app on? So their position is, well, we're adding value to this Apple ecosystem, to us and a lot of other developers. Clearly, the EU agrees more with Spotify. This is going to be about $1.9 billion U.S. dollar fine for Apple. Of course, they're going to appeal and work through. But this is also, guys, coming ahead of later this week, the Digital Markets Act, that big muscular EU law over there that's going to really crack down on Apple and Google and Facebook and so many other big tech, U.S. tech companies. Those rules go into full effect. I'll have more reporting on that later this week. But this is just one beat in just this big drama between these companies.
Is this the one where they kind of whittled it down over time?
Exactly.
This is basically them saying you have to at least allow the developers to have their own subscription signups within, instead of saying you have to use Apple Pay for these things?
Basically,
too?
Yes. And that's going to be part of the Digital Markets Act as well. So these are separate cases, but related. And so the Digital Markets Act, in theory, takes care of a lot of this. But we're looking here, this fine.
This is a much bigger fine than was
it was reported, right? 500 million euros.
That's what I was
and
say.
So this is more than double what people were expecting the fine to be. Yeah, more than triple what people were expecting. You heard me just off air. I went, whoa, when the news came in.
Right.
This is a huge fine. And it also shows this Digital Markets Act, if violations of that, 10% of global revenue, so $400 billion for Apple, that's a $40 billion fine if they violate. Obviously, there's, you know, processes they can go through. So the fines are huge.
And something, I mean, they've already changed their policies on this. They changed the policies at least a year or two ago because Japan was making noises about some
a little bit,
too.
And it's different region by region. So what we've also seen Apple do, Becky, is kind of fight this region by region, jurisdiction by jurisdiction. The changes that they're going to make to comply with the DMA later this month, or later this week, rather, it's only going to be in Europe. So you're going to have a different iPhone experience as a European customer than people in the rest of the world. But a lot of people see those changes as emblematic of what they might have to do in the U.S. We're expecting any day now the DOJ to file their antitrust lawsuit against Apple, which covers a lot of these same issues. So this could be a template for what we see around the world, even though this is happening in the U.S.
I was just looking at some numbers, and I know Apple doesn't break this out, but I was looking at some numbers, some estimates of what these things are. And at least according to The Verge, some of the numbers that they've looked at on this, I think it's something like 8.3 billion in revenue that was taken in Apple Music in 2022.
Yeah.
So if you compare that to the size of the fine, That's a pretty huge chunk.
It's big, but Apple's more
revenue
than just Apple Music, whereas, clearly, you know, Spotify's argument has always been, you know, they have this advantage. They can afford to lose money, whereas we can't. And so that's part of their Spotify's argument as well, because Apple has way more businesses than just music, and it's, of course, not charging itself a 30% commission either.
Maybe worth taking a look at Apple shares right now, too. Yeah. They're down, but just slightly, a decline of about 7 3/4%.
Yeah, there will be an appeal, and there's going to be more battles. It's not over. Apple's idea for complying with the European Commission rules, again, going in effect on Thursday, Apple doesn't even know if they're in compliance with what the EC wants. So it's going to be an interesting experiment to see, once that Apple puts us out there, if the EC agrees you are in compliance. Of course, Spotify and so many other developers are saying, this isn't going to cut it. This is going against the spirit of the law.
We need Apple for the market.
Yes.
And it hasn't, it's,
yeah, people have been at NVIDIA, it's fine.
Has the baton been passed? I mean, yeah. $2.7 trillion on Apple, but it has been the...
Well, the baton's been passed to Microsoft.
Right.
Apple has no AI story to tell
we need
the
them
same
all.
Way
we
Microsoft
need them all.
And
Apple's
NVIDIA
an,
do.
Right, Apple's an important sign. It's been tough. Yeah. What are they going to...
Everyone's
they
got anything 401k, my 401k.
They got anything good coming out?
There's rumors that as soon as today, we might get some new Macs
electric
and
car?
iPads.
No.
That's not happening. Yeah. But again, are new Macs and iPads going to change, you know, what we've seen with the stock over the last couple
hasn't.
Of months? No.
It hasn't, but it's been enough for the last couple of years to keep
Apple
it going.
Apple is putting enormous pressure on itself. This AI announcement that Tim Cook has been teasing for the last couple of weeks, enormous pressure to deliver something truly groundbreaking and amazing, because they never tease things in advance. Now they're teasing this in advance, and if it doesn't live up to that hype, look out.
The goggles aren't going to do it.
Did you buy one?
Are you out of your mind?
I didn't even buy one.
I see people, they make fun of people already.
I don't think Andrew's even bought it, and he's like the biggest fan of it.
We'll see. Dune Part 2 hits theaters this weekend. It hit them, and grossing $81.5 million at the domestic box office, making it the highest grossing movie of 2024 so far. Joining us now is Rich Greenfield, Lightshed Partners. Rich, it's a good number, I guess. Didn't we used to do hundreds, 200s all the time? Or what did we used to do typically?
Look, Joe, this is a great number. I mean, I think the team at Warner Brothers should be very happy. I mean, this is a great start for this film, and shows when you put, you know, really compelling content in theaters, people show up. I mean, I think the challenge is that audiences are being a lot more selective. And I think that's just a function of there's just so much incredible content at home. The bar to leave your house, the bar to go to a theater is just higher than it was.
So what,
and I think the pandemic just pushed that even higher.
I don't know if you heard my question, but what did it used to be? Didn't we used to do hundreds all the time for openings?
I mean, I think the better way of thinking about it is, I think this would have been the 11th or 12th best weekend of 2019. So if you think about pre-pandemic, you know, this was a not even a top 10 weekend. Now, you know, Dune was a very good number. It's going to be a profitable movie. But this certainly isn't sort of the, you know, the massive successes that we saw during 2019. But it's a very good start for Warner Brothers. And look, Zaslav and team need some success on the film side for sure.
I know I'm going to have to see it probably this weekend. I'm going to have to, we'll probably go together with parts of the my family. Rich, should I see the first one again? I don't even remember what happened. I remember the worms. That's about all I remember. Do I need to bone up on the first one to understand the second one? Have you seen it yet?
You actually can go watch the first one. I believe it's on both Max as well as on Netflix. They had a very smart strategy of putting it onto Netflix so that they could sort of broaden the audience ahead of coming out, the second one coming out in theaters.
The demise of the movie theater was or wasn't greatly exaggerated. Now I'm back to thinking it's still going to be tough sledding. What's going to turn the corner, Rich?
Joe, we're not, you know, the industry is changing, right? I mean, it's getting tougher. You know, look at, you know, if you look at overall box office, yes, it's impacted no doubt by the strikes last year, but you're still down, you know, 40%+ from, you know, pre-pandemic levels. It'll get much better. It'll probably finish the year, you know, substantially better than where we are right now as the volume picks up across the rest of the year. I think the question, though, is, you know, are we still going to be down 15, 20, 25% from pre-pandemic levels. And so that's not terrible. It's a business, Joe. It's just a smaller business than it was historically. And I think that's the key, is it being a smaller business than you had before.
It was a great year, in my view. Maybe it's because I saw all these Oscar nominees at Telluride, but I can tell you five unbelievably great films that came out. These should be some of the best of times, not some of the worst of times. And I'm not talking about like ridiculous the eighth sequel to some superhero. I mean, Anatomy of a Fall or Zone of Interest. I don't know if you've seen those.
Did Anatomy of a Fall leave you wondering what really happened, though, Joe?
It did. It did. She might have done it. I'm not sure. But wasn't it great? Did you see Zone of Interest too?
I thought Anatomy of the Fall was the best picture I've seen in the past year. It was a fascinating. I mean, you know, very rarely do you see foreign language films
Saltburn, great.
Yeah.
Sick.
Best.
Sick. Nutty.
You have issues, Joe.
This show, you didn't like the ending? That guy's hilarious. I did not like Poor Things. I didn't get that at all, Rich. But this should be a better time. I'm not sure what the antidote to this is. I don't know. I don't know how you fix things, Rich. You need to help me.
I don't think it's not a fixing or not fixing. I think it's just consumer behavior. You know, look, our job at LightJet is we're always thinking about kind of where the puck is going. And I think when you look at the explosion of streaming and what's happened in the streaming universe over the course of the last decade, there's just an incredible amount of content. And so, yes, having a collective experience at a movie theater is still amazing. And I think people will always want to gather together to watch something and have that, you know, quote unquote experience, but it's just less special than it used to be.
All right, Greenfield, you missed. That's all of these. I'm going to see him again this year. Rich, thank you.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, March is Women's History Month. Joanne Littman joins us on how women boost the economy and why the U.S. should boost them.
If we just level up women to the level of other developed countries where they have better daycare and federally subsidized daycare and they have higher levels of workforce participation, it would add something like $650 billion to GDP every year.
We'll be right back.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nexco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Nexco, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Up and Becky, Q.
March is Women's History Month, and our next guest has a timely op-ed arguing that women are the economy's secret weapon. Joining us right now is Joanne Littman. She is Yale University lecturer, also the author of Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work, and she's a CNBC contributor. And Joanne, this pretty interesting article. We have pushed off that recession that everybody thought was coming. You think a big part of that is women in the workforce. You want to explain?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that women are the economy's secret weapon, because if you look at what's happened with women's employment, okay, go back 4 years, first of all, to the beginning of the pandemic, which was actually next week, 4 years ago.
Wow.
Women were slammed, right? We had the she session. We lost more than 12 million jobs. Women lost or left their jobs.
Because they were supposed to be at home teaching their kids.
Well, part of it was the kinds of jobs they were in. Part of it is because the schools were closed. Daycare was closed. They had no choice. There was concern then. It set women back 30 years. Janet Yellen, among others, said this could be permanent scarring, she said. Now, you fast forward, by last spring, what happened was women not only soared back to previous levels, but surpassed previous levels. We hit a record of female workforce participation for prime-age women, 25 to 54, last spring, and it has stayed historically high levels since then.
And you think part of that is the flexibility that so many workplaces offered. I think one of the statistics you pointed out is that 40% of people work remote at least one day a week, which is a stunning number.
It is a stunning number, but companies now are pushing back. And I think that this is actually of some concern. I spoke to quite a few women who have been pushed out now at this point. And, you know, Joe, you were talking earlier about the tight labor market. This is one group where the numbers have only increased, and now we're kind of, you know, putting this pressure on, and we have to have sort of a more nuanced look at, because, look, I understand how important it is. We've talked about this before, yeah, to be on the premises, to work for culture, for collaboration, but at the same time, we're pushing out an entire group of particularly mothers of young children, parents of disabled kids, who are able to work because of these remote and hybrid options, and now are being squeezed out.
Yeah, I've taken both sides of this argument. You have me swayed again with this one. Just, I started thinking about Japan and the problems Japan has had. One of the things that they have riding right now is their hope to get more women into the workforce. And if they don't, there's only so much growth that they can anticipate from that economy. Japan's pretty notoriously difficult in terms of the hours you're expected to work, in terms of what's expected at home for mothers as well. And that's probably a unique difference we have and something that has helped us.
It is as well. And there's been a lot of research actually on the relationship between women in the workplace and GDP. And Moody's has done this, and various other economists have looked at this. And the figures I've seen are as much as if we just level up women to the level of other developed countries where they have better daycare and federally subsidized daycare, and they have higher levels of workforce participation. If we just leveled up women in the United States, it would add something like $650 billion to GDP every year.
But what you're making the argument right now is that companies should be a little more flexible, especially if you're dealing with women or parents who have issues at home.
My argument 100% is to have these inflexible return to office mandates. I understand why people are doing it, but at the same time, we need to be more nuanced. We need to have more flexibility in our thinking. I've heard from so many women, because I've been out there talking and writing about this, and the stories you get from women are just heartbreaking. I mean, women who actually have been working very successfully at home or remotely for a number of years, and then suddenly they lose their jobs.
All right, let me ask, make this a little bit of a tougher question.
Sure.
If you have flexibility, should you make less money?
I don't think so. I mean, if you're doing the job, look, I think we have to get out of the mindset of the where you are doing your job and get back into the mindset of what
the only thing
are
I will say is it costs more money
to
commute in every day. It costs more money if you're driving in, if you have to pay for your food there, if you have to pay for parking. Now they're talking about congestion pricing in New York and some other places too. Should you get a reward? Let's turn it from a stick to a carrot. Should you get a reward for showing up every day and paying for and dealing with all this?
I think
stuff?
That rather than pay, I do think the reward could be more along the lines of we'll take care of your parking, or we'll give you, you know, a commuting allowance, right? As opposed to saying you get more, because your job is not worth more for being on the premises. Your expenses might be more, but your job is
the
not.
The silver lining is we know how to do it from home now. So for people that can benefit from it and can't do anything else, they should be doing it. We just, all the slackers that don't want to come back, those are the ones that we got to get back here. But I mean, we should be able to on a case-by-case basis be able to decide. People who need to work at home, let them work at home. People who can come back, get your ass in here.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. No, you
don't.
You're absolutely
right. Work, but it should
right.
be we learn how to do it. Let's take advantage of it.
Exactly. Yeah. We know how to do it.
We're always simpatico. I just say it more bluntly.
Always, Joe.
Like, exactly.
But it is true that, you know, also women are more educated than men. So we know that, you know, women. I've talked to the economists who say, look, women actually, as a group, contribute more to productivity, which is another issue that is of concern. Women have become
working moms are very
okay.
Efficient.
Let's not go overboard
that.
Here. I mean, I agree with you, John. We
no,
don't
no,
need.
No, I'm
I don't
want to
feel
economics.
Feel badly about myself after this. We gotta go. Gotta go. I'm gonna cut you off. Thank you. Before you say anything else.
That's Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for starting your week with us on this Monday. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan. Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern and get the best of our TV show right into your ears when you follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nextel, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Nextel, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.